I came to the 800 investigation actually really 2 years after it happened in 98. It was something that I worked on this weekly newspaper in the Hamptons, and obviously there was a big event there because the plane went down just immediately west of the Hamptons, so off the Mauritius area. And naturally, I heard all the talks there. You know, maybe the difference in and first I have to compliment Mr. Cashel's great research, and a lot of as I'm listening to him, I'm looking over these articles which I wrote a long time ago now, from 98 to 2000. And let me just drop one point, and then I'll tell you a little bit more about myself. Now, I thought it was very interesting bringing Iraq into it because I had heard a lot of people that I were talking to, and I don't claim any great government connections, but I had a source who was doing a lot of research on terrorism for me, which really he was the one who originally pointed me in that direction, and he was saying it was the Iranians. And now this private eye I spoke to in 2000, who had been hired in the summer of 96 by a family member to investigate it, and originally gone into the case thinking it was a military cover-up. He related to me he was eventually told by someone he knew in the CIA that this was retaliation by an Iraqi connection for what had happened earlier in the 90s, you know, the bombing of Iraq or the pushing them out of Kuwait.
Right.
And I did surmise or conclude a Bin Laden connection based on this is that I know that at one time Ramzi Youssef, who again did have an Iraqi passport, that's definite. He was according to mainstream news sources. He did stay for a time at a house in Pakistan that was allegedly owned by Bin Laden. And I looked on Bin Laden as basically sort of a financier. He might not have had his hand directly in, but I kind of see him as sort of a godfather allocating funds to what he would consider worthy projects. Now,
for Flight 800. Hang on to that thought for a second. Let me get Jack back into that. So, Jack, where are you with the idea of an Iranian connection for Flight 800?
Well, you know, I have heard that, too, and there's a couple of arguments, and it's, you know, like, again, we get back to that July 17th date. If July 4th Mecca blows up, you figure it's either us or someone trying to pin it on us. Well, we wouldn't do it on July 4th. That's not our nature. It would be likely someone trying to pin it on us. Given the hostile relationship between Iraq and Iran, I mean, it's not impossible. There is also the issue of our shooting down by accident an Iranian Airbus.
Right. That's another point I was going to bring up. Now, when I was having a discussion with a certain individual, and I said to him the question that many people would ask, that, okay, if the U.S. government knows this is terrorism, you know, why don't they retaliate? And, of course, there's one obvious question, one obvious answer is that would destroy the airline industry on the East Coast right off the bat. Secondly, now for instance, this happens in 96. The Iranians were due for an election, and we as a government want the moderates to win, and to pin this on Iran would only add fuel to the anti-American feeling in Iran. And that all sounds logical. And then, you know, you brought up the imminence of the Olympics now. I had a source who did willingly submit to a lie detector test and pass a test, and of course we know that that's still not a guarantee that what he was telling me was true, or that he was relating a conversation he had with an NTSB official who relayed to him that the government knew it was terrorism but didn't want it to announce it because of the upcoming Olympics. Again, you know, even when you get the thing about 800 is it's sort of like the Kennedy assassination. More and more stuff comes out, but will we ever reach the definitive truth? I don't know.
Well, go ahead and get Jack on that idea of the on that source that had passed the lie detector.
Yeah, I would say that there's another factor involved, and I don't want to get political here, but even more important than the Olympics was the a month later you had the Democratic National Convention, and 3 months after that you had the elections. Bill Clinton had struggled back from this enormous political deficit after the November 94 debacle.
Right, that's true.
And there's an interesting story that came out of the Masters golf tournament that year in 96. Clinton's best friend on the tour was Greg Norman, the shark. He went into the final round of the 96 Masters with a 6-stroke lead and blew it. Biggest choke in the history of the Masters. end of the day, Clinton made a video of the last four holes, gave it to all his key staff, and said, under no circumstance will we be Greg Normanized. In other words,
wow.
Brought all the way back. We cannot be Greg Normanized. And this was that Greg Norman moment. And I think, personally, I think what happened is they just hesitated, you know, like thinking they could just push this off for a few days. And then once you start doing that, then you're going to kind of push it off. And as was just made clear, if you're not sure whether it's Iraq or Iran,
right?
And you can tell with a straight face every security person in your purview, listen, we can't retaliate because we don't know who did it, you know? And
well,
we can't alarm the American people until we do.
So that way
you're going to get the complicity of straight people in the investigative hierarchy.
There's one other fact that came in the facts from Jerry. Again, we're talking about Jerry Chemise, who was a writer at the time on Long Island, that the log of the ship that allegedly picked up the black box for flight TWA has no entry that it did so.
Right.
Jack,
well,
are you?
And I'll just give you a little background about that. Is that, yeah, I got the, now, allegedly, I'll say allegedly, the box was picked up just before midnight, July 24th, which would be a week after the plane went down. Now, I, you know, through the Freedom of Information, I got the log for the July 23rd, July 24th, July 25th. And nowhere in that log do they mention picking up the black box. Now, they mention picking up debris from the plane, even a dead body from the plane. Now, I spoke to someone at the Navy who gave me this possible explanation, you know. He said, well, technically a log on a ship is only about, you know, the day-to-day mundane running of the ship. They could be in at sea next to another ship on fire and might not even mention it. But, you know, when you think of that, this was, everybody was looking for this black box. This was important. And obviously the log had TWA-related material in it. To not say that we picked up the black box at, you know, at 23XX hours seems incongruous. Now, a little further story on that. What happened, if many people might recall, about 2 days after the plane went down, the congressman for that area at the time, Michael Forbes, goes on TV and he says, we're just about to find the black boxes. Or they know where they are, they're going to pick them up. And within 24 hours, he has to go back on TV and act seemingly very sheepish and foolish and say, oh, you know, I was too eager. You know, that's not true. We still don't know where they are. Now, I spoke to Forbes' aide at the time, who later went into local politics in the East Hampton area, on the east end of Long Island. She was present at the meeting, you know, and she said there was the FBI, the Navy, the NTSB, Congressman Forbes. And she said they did lead him to believe they were just about to pick up the boxes. Now, that we apparently know, that the boxes were sent to Washington like 3:34 in the morning on the 25th of July. But this also lends fuel to the idea that they had picked up the boxes before and they had to give it a look over before they actually, you know, released them.